Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm going to start with Connor McDavid. I'll get into the intro.
Okay.
This is the intro.
No problem. Sorry.
I try to mix it up, you know, the whole templated welcome to the Old Spills podcast. Just trying to be different. Just because it's Monday morning. Monday morning, October 7th already. Anyways, Connor McDavid coming back from a PCL injury. I would say he's not 100% speed yet. However, boy, I think 90% or whatever percent speed looks just fine to me.
I'd say he's 100% speed. I would say his hands aren't quite caught up yet.
Okay.
But I think speed-wise, I think he's fine. I think, you know, he had four. He was going through LA's defense pretty easily on Saturday night. Now, LA didn't have a great defense. They got a lot of young defensemen playing on their team, too, once you get past, you know, Doughty was playing with an 18-year-old Swedish defenseman as a partner. So, but yeah, he was going through them left and right. So, he's fine. So, and props to the coach who looked at the roster and says, Draisaitl on his own line? Nah. I'm going to put him, Draisaitl and Connor on the same line, and both have 5 points in two games.
Well, McDavid, yeah, I think you're right, Jim. His hands, the timing is still not there when it comes to his hands and the puck. I think the speed A to B in a straight line is there. I'm not sure what the speed is like when he's turning and twisting. I think you're right there, Craig. I think there might still be more left, which is kind of scary to think about considering the way he was blowing around guys in Los Angeles. And you just got to shake your head of what McDavid did last 2 years and how he's improved on that this year. He hasn't even reached his prime yet, which is kind of a scary thought when you're thinking this guy is still 2 or 3 years away from his actual peak prime. And it's scary with the things that he's doing on the ice. It does, you know, Jim would know better. It does remind me of Gretzky when he would just go, oh, what did Gretzky do today? Oh, he got 4 points tonight. He got 3 points tonight. You go, I think.
Yeah, after a while. I mean, Connor now is like, if he gets 2 points a game, as he's done so many times in his career, you go, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah. So he gets 2 points. So it's like Crosby when he was, you know, early on in his career too. It's yeah, they're supposed to get 2 points a game. And if they only get one, you say, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, had a bad night.
If you had a bad night, you only got one. You know, we pointed out now when Connor does not get a point in a game, you're thinking, really didn't have a good game tonight. He didn't even get a point. So he's fine. He's got 5 points in two games.
Just a pleasure to watch. And if you saw that game on Saturday and just, you marvel at some of the stuff he did, and it's funny, we've been watching this guy for 4 years now, and there's still times where you just marvel at the stuff he did. The way he picked Doughty's pocket, that one goal, and then not only picked his pocket, but had the presence of mind to slide it over Draisaitl and for that quick goal pass to Cassie. You just shake your head, and you're like, wow, this guy's, he's a pleasure to watch, and the Edmonton Oilers and Edmonton Oilers fans, I think, are extremely, extremely fortunate.
Unbelievably, he also drew three penalties in a game. And in the past, there was lots of times where at the end of the night, you were saying, yeah, where were all those penalty calls on him? You know, and he drew three penalties and one really early in the game too. So that he ended up, well, he didn't get the penalty because he scored a goal, you know, on a delayed penalty. But yeah, he's fine. And if he's fine, Draisaitl's fine. So at least they got those two-prong attack going. And right now, it looks like they can outscore their mistakes. last game, I thought they made lots of mistakes, but they scored six goals, and that hasn't happened too often.
And it is, I mean, we're two games into the season, and you know, obviously there's still 80 regular season games to play. So whether or not we can expect the same pace from McDavid, Draisaitl, anybody, Kakassian, on the scoring side of things, you know, once we start playing some of the heavier hitters when it comes to the top dogs in the NHL, which we don't have a lot of here.
There's no heavy hitters on this trip. I mean, what's going to happen? Very interesting in Long Island. They won the Jennings Trophy last year for the fewest goals allowed in the league, 196. The Islanders, they've given up three goals in two games. So the Oilers won't have as easy a route to scoring goals against the Islanders, I don't think. But then the Islanders don't score much either. So that's the number one test on the road trips. The only team that made the playoffs last year on this road trip with the Rangers in Jersey and Chicago.
And as you know, for as much as I'm sure they didn't want to see Robin Leonard leave the island, you have to give some credit to their defense for some of that Jennings Trophy as well, I would expect. And that defense is mostly intact.
I think they play the game like Dave Tippett wants his team to play the game.
Well, get a good lesson and at least watch.
You know, because the Islanders the year before Trotz got there were terrible defensively. And then he went in first year, they won the Jennings, 196 goals allowed. So I think that's what Dave Tippett is looking for. And as long as his goalie stays in his net, doesn't give the puck away a couple of times, as Mike Smith did, they'll be fine.
Yeah, this trip's going to be interesting for the Oilers because as they won their first two games, but they're one against opponents that I think are really going to struggle this year. I think the Kings are really going to struggle this year. They scored five goals, but I don't think the Kings rarely score that many goals. I think it's going to be a rarity, and then they can't keep the puck out of their net. And I think Jonathan Quick is not the same Jonathan Quick that he was two, 3 years ago. You're right, Jim. That defense is really, really green. They got a lot of young players on the defense, and they're making a lot of mistakes. And up front, I don't think they have much, you know, beyond three or four guys. So I think the Kings are really going to struggle this year. The Canucks, we know where they are. They're still kind of on the upward trend, but I think they still got some growing to do. So the Oilers were able to do a good job getting past those teams, but now I think going into Long Island, we're going to kind of see exactly what they have and whether or not those support players who did a good job against Los Angeles, without those guys, they don't win that game against Los Angeles. If they can do the same thing. And I think that's the key to the Oilers this season. It's not McDavid and Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins. It's an Neil, for all that matter. He looked pretty good on Saturday as well. I think it's going to be the bottom two lines where they can contribute a goal a night. And I think that's going to be the telling factors, where they can get one or two goals a night, then the Oilers are going to be successful. If they don't contribute on the scoreboard, then I think the Oilers won't be able to outscore their mistakes like they did Saturday.
Well, I mean, that's obvious. Even when you consider last season, when we had career years from both McDavid and Draisaitl, and never mind Cassian and Chiasson, and then well out of the playoffs, no secondary scoring, very little from the bottom.
They have to do more than just tread water. Mm-hmm. You know, as Dallas Eakins would say, they have to chop wood too.
Did we see any of that on Saturday? I mean, I know Nygaard scored and Gaten Haas set him up. But
Nygaard scored, Jurco set up a goal. I thought towards the end of the game they played a lot better. I think they still kind of, some of those guys are still feeling their way around the league, which is understandable. They haven't played in the NHL, and they're talented players, and I think that's going to do a world of good confidence for those young guys to be able to contribute in a 6-5 game. It's not like they got the fourth goal in an 8-3 win. So they were able to contribute in a big win, and they got big goals for the Oilers when they needed them.
They need rather than two fourth lines, they need a third line. They need a third line that can score some goals. And, you know, if Haas comes on and looks like he's an offensive type center, with Chiasson perhaps on that line and somebody else, then maybe they can score some goals too. I think the fourth line is pretty intact. I think it's going to be Sheahan with Kara and Archibald. And that's a good penalty killing type line, you know, keep the puck in the other team's end line. But the third line has to score some goals.
Before we leave the offense, you know, I wanted to circle back to McDavid again. He scored 116 points last year. He's been trending upwards. You know, here he is in year five of his career. Every year he's gotten more and more points. Last 3 years, he's scored 100 plus. How many points will he get this year? Will he get even more than 116?
Well, I don't see 130 being out of the question if he stays healthy. I think just the way he's playing, just the way he can just take over and dominate a game. And it was one of those things where Saturday you just got the sense of, I'm not going to lose this game. We're just going to go. And he just took it up an extra level, another step. I don't think that's out of the question if he stays healthy to challenge that 125, 130. But I think that's the key. And I think, Jim, you're right. The key is if he's getting those calls going for him this year, if he's going to get those obstruction calls and those little hooks and those little holes and as teams try to slow him down and he spends a lot of time on the power play, that's going to be good things for him. It's going to be good things for the Edmonton Oilers. And I think that was a key on Saturday, is that before he would come through the neutral zone and guys would try to slow him down, guys would get in his way, guys would basically obstruct him, and referees would turn a blind eye. So I'm interested to see whether this year they said, okay, listen, he's the best player in the game. If you're trying to hold him just because he's way faster than everyone else doesn't mean that's going to be allowed this year. And I think we saw a bit of that on Saturday.
And I think, to be honest, I think Draisaitl's played better than McDavid the first two games. I think on both have five points. Connor had a really good, excellent second game, but Draisaitl played really well both games. And he's played 27 minutes the first game, 26:05 the second game. So hopefully they're not going to try to play him 26 minutes every game, because he'd be dead by U.S. Thanksgiving if that's the case playing forward. But
well, I think he was clearly their best player for sure on Wednesday against the Canucks. I mean, obviously he's been playing all those minutes. It was very noticeable, and I mean, you guys were there.
You don't want to. Yeah, they keep talking like they don't really want McDavid or Draisaitl to kill penalties, but because Shane didn't play, Draisaitl played 2 minutes and something in the first game and over 3 minutes and killing penalties in the second game, plus the power play, plus even strength. That's, you know, the star players play a lot, but having them on both special teams and 5-on-5 is, you probably don't want that. So hopefully Shane comes back and can take, you know, most of that penalty killing away from Draisaitl.
As long as you're feeding him enough carbohydrates after the game and whatnot, I don't know.
What I find interesting is last couple of years, Draisaitl's gotten off to slow starts, and he's a self-professed slow starter. And this has been the opposite this year. He's gotten off to a great start, and he looks like he's flying out there. So, and him and Connor McDavid together just think the game on a different level, and then they execute at a higher speed than everyone else does. That's what makes them so dangerous together. And even Todd McClellan said, I'd prefer them apart than together. They're just so dangerous together. And to me, that's a chip that every coach has. It's kind of like a joker card that you're going to hold off and not play it till you have to. But I think early on, Dave Tippett has realized that this is his, he's not afraid to play this card right away, because if he's going to go down fighting with his two best guys.
And he doesn't have to worry. This year, it looks like, if James Neal plays with Nugent Hopkins, he's got 2/3 of a second line as well. And, you know, if Nygaard looks like he's fast enough to play with him, at least he doesn't have to play Leon on a second line. And Connor and Nugent Hopkins actually has somebody on his line who might score a goal. So Leon can play the whole year with Connor if he feels like it.
You know, you bring up Todd McClellan. I was going to move on to Mike Smith, but you know, it was Todd McClellan's first time back in Edmonton, talking to the media, being at a game involving the Oilers, but this time he's the head coach of the LA Kings. And they, you know, I think most people listening to this will probably have read what Todd McClellan had to say in response to questions from media about, you know, moving on from Edmonton and whatnot. How was he to you guys?
Well, he was always great with us. He was great with us when he
came. Well, how was he like on Saturday?
He was good. I think I remember I asked him whether or not he was like happy to get this game out of the way personally, because it was the first game and then he doesn't have to worry about it, making his return to Edmonton. And it didn't seem to him like it bothered him much coming back to Edmonton. He was more concerned with getting the Kings' first game out of the way and getting his team on hitting the ground running. And I think the Kings were the last team to open the regular season, so he was just anxious to get And so that, I think that took away from the pomp and circumstance of him coming back to Edmonton after what he did here. And so he was excited to be back. I know the team was excited for him. The team wanted to get a win for him, but I think he was just more excited to get going with the Los Angeles Kings and try and get this franchise turned around and basically do in LA what he did here in Edmonton in his first couple of years, got him into the playoffs. He got that team into the playoffs and got him back in the second round. And it's funny, he went from a coach of the year candidate to someone who got fired 2 years. That's the way the coaching industry is, I guess, and nowadays. But he was more fired because the general manager was trying to save his job. And towards the end, you could just see that, you know, Peter Chiarelli was just doing whatever he could to kind of try and stay afloat. And I think, unfortunately for the Oilers, that franchise took a big step back during that time. But Todd was great. Todd's a very smart coach, a very good coach. And going around the room, talking to the Los Angeles Kings about it, they love him. They love that he's a teacher. They love that he's not just a yeller and screamer and try to motivate and be a rah-rah guy. He'll actually show you what you're doing wrong and how to get better. And I think that's refreshing for, I think, a lot of those guys in that room.
Yeah, you know, mutual admiration society with the Oiler players and the King players. And often coaches don't get that. Often when they go out the door, the players who are left on that team, they may say a couple of platitudes, oh, it's too bad that he got fired, but they're happy that he's gone and somebody else is coming in. But I think most people thought Todd did a good job, and this was the general manager trying to save his own job. So he fired Todd, and only one thing sticks in his craw, that they could have done this so he didn't have to get on the plane going all the way to San Jose and then turn around and come all the way home to Edmonton. So that didn't sit terribly well with him. And that fence with Peter and Todd, I don't know if that fence has been mended or not, but if they see each other during the season, they probably have to talk about that.
Now, Mike Smith, we knew he was a puck handling goalie before the season started. Obviously, that's his MO in a lot of ways. But his wandering ways did result in a couple of goals on Saturday. But that's probably something you're just going to have to expect is going to happen from time to time. I was watching the broadcast, and someone on the Hockey in Canada crew said, yeah, you can expect that up to a dozen times in a year from Mike Smith. He's going to be out of position, and the opposition's probably going to get an easy goal. Obviously the result was a win for the Oilers, but it could have been a different game if maybe he wasn't out of position. I don't know.
He's confident and stubborn. He's not changing the way he plays. Mm-hmm. I like goalies that handle a puck and take the pressure off the defenseman. They get hit enough during the game going back for pucks. If you got a goalie that can play the puck, the defenseman, you won't find one defenseman that gripes if he gives up the puck and there's an easy goal, because their wear and tear on the defenseman when a goalie can handle a puck is great for defensemen. They're taking far less hits than they normally would take. And the forwards, if they're smart, we're trying to find a hole too, because he doesn't just pass it 5 feet to a defenseman. He's looking to pass it 25 feet to a forward. So I suspect there'll be 4 or 5 breakaways from Connor McDavid in the regular season where he tries to hit Connor in stride at center ice. And you're right. Mike is going to do that 2 times in a game is a little rare. Usually when a goalie gives up 2 goals like that in a game, he's coming to the bench. He's not still playing. Dave Tippett's seen that before with Mike Smith, so he wasn't taking him out. So as long as it's not a nightly occurrence where there's an easy goal. I think the one he would like back is the first one where he tried to pass the puck 60 feet. The one behind the net, that happens enough where a goalie goes behind the net, gets squeezed off the puck by a forward, and he throws it in front and goes in the net. The one where he's trying to go, you know, 60 feet and Kopitar steals it, that's not a good play. And Kopitar is such a good player. A lot of guys just bury their head and try to shoot it into the empty net. He looked up and saw Dustin Brown wide open and said, no, I think I'll just pass it to Dustin Brown for an empty net goal. But he's not changing the way he plays.
I think we saw this in Calgary last year. I know there was one particular game where Mike Smith threw the puck away and cost the Flames a game. And I think we saw it four or five times. And you just got to wonder whether the risk is worth the reward at times. And I think with Mike Smith, and he got fortunate the Oilers were able to come back and score six goals and kind of bail him out there. And you're right, defensemen love puck moving goalies and they love, you know, not having to go back and retrieve the puck themselves. But at what point does risk is not worth the reward? And I think that's the breaking point that the Oilers, because you expect this, like they're saying, four or five more times this season, he's going to throw the puck away, he's going to make a bad play, or he's going to get caught out of his net. It just happens with wandering goaltenders. That happens, they get caught out of the net. And whether there's a breaking point or not, that's going to be the interesting question. How many goals are the Oilers willing to let slide to have a guy that can play the puck behind the net or move the puck up to their defenseman? And so if it evens out, maybe Dave Tippett says, that's fine, it's going to even out in the end. You know, he's going to help us get six goals and he's going to give up six goals or however it works. But I think it might get old really quick, because I know it got old in Calgary really quick. Especially when, you know, fourth or fifth time that it happened, goaltenders are supposed to stop the puck. Your first job is to stop the puck. Your second job is to move it. And I think that's the big telling issue right now is how long before the patience runs out on these mistakes, these unforced errors, if you will, that he's making, trying to make a play. And I guess you can give him props for trying to make a play. You're right, he's not going to change his style of play. But it's up to the coaches and the players and the team to say, okay, enough is enough. Because there's going to be a point, I think, this year where someone's going to say, okay, enough is enough. You can't stop. We can't afford to give away goals. He gave away two on Saturday. Oilers were able to overcome that. But this is a league that's too tight and there's too much at stake to start giving away goals.
Well, I think it'll be an issue the next time he gives away a goal like that and the Oilers lose by a goal. If it's because, you know, these are close games. It was a 6-5 game on Saturday. Yeah, it's a tight league.
I think apart from moving the puck to his own players and then trying to gamble and move it up ice, I think the thing that coaches like most about Mike Smith is the opposing team knows they can't dump the puck in like they normally do, because he can go out and get the puck, as opposed to most teams where the goalie kind of stays in the net and just stops it behind the net. And for his defensemen. So the forechecking part of the game when you're playing against Mike Smith is a little different. And if you've got a team that really can forecheck hard, sometimes they don't come quite as hard because he can play the puck. So I think it's a balancing act for the coaching staff too. They like the fact that the opposing team, their scouting report is such that they just can't dump it in like they normally would against some teams.
Has anybody asked Mike Smith how he's able to handle the puck like that?
He's got a real short stick too.
Have a glove inside of his catching mitt that he's able to grip onto the stick? Because obviously not every goalie can do that.
No, it's just practice. It's just
He was in Dallas when Marty Turco was there, and I think he probably watched how Marty handled the puck, and he got really good at it too. And I would say that if you took 10 goalies, 7 of them just stop it behind the net, and that's all they're good at. And there's 3 that are fairly good at moving it. And then there's the odd one who's really good at moving it.
Well, why don't goalies practice that more, like people, like players work on their slap shots or their whatever, their stick handling? Why not?
They're just not good at it. Remember when Cujo was here, he had to turn his hands over to flip the puck to center. He couldn't do it with it.
Yeah, part of it is too is the way the goalies where their glove is situated, because sometimes goalie can just slide the stick down and shoot right. But if you're right, if Cujo is a left-hand shot and he had to turn his stick over, it's a little different. So I think that plays a big part of it. If the way the goalie shoots the puck, if you catch with your left hand, and if you're a right-hand shot, then you have to turn your stick over to shoot the puck out. Yeah, right. But if you're, you know, if you catch with your left hand and you're a left shot, then you can slide the stick.
One thing about Mike Smith, every time now there's an empty net,
he's got to go for it.
You're looking on the end. If you're watching on TV or you're in the seats, you're thinking, oh, he might score here, because he can score. He can shoot it over the people with, you know, and get it into the empty net. So that's going to be very interesting. And I kind of like the way he plays. I know as Derek pointed out, there's certainly some risk to the way he plays. But I thought as the game wore on, he battled and he made some good saves. and he didn't let the game get out of hand. Team came back, but he wouldn't let the other team get two goals ahead to where, you know, where you were saying, oh, this isn't very good. We're going to lose this game if you're an Edmonton Oilers fan. So he kept in it, and, you know, the best goalie say, I don't care how many you give up at the end of the night, they still got a W. So they don't care what mistakes they make as long as there's a win at the end of the night.
Now, storyline heading into the LA game, coming off the Vancouver game, was Adam Larsson's injury. He's out 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured right fibula, so bone in his lower leg. Now he's out of the lineup, and obviously the Oilers went through their shuffle to get Joel Pearson in the lineup now. How does Larsson's injury change the makeup of the defense?
Well, quite a bit. There's no shutdown
right
defense pair anymore.
So you're running with that.
You're running with a puck mover, Ethan Bear, who's played like 20 NHL games, and a shutdown guy who's a really good skater in Darnell Nurse, but is also physical. So they got two rookies in their top four, you know, Pearson and Bear, along with Klefbom and Nurse, if you keep the same third pairing with Benning and Russell. So that's a little risky, but Ken Holland he refuses to just stopgap this and say, oh, he could be out till the end of November. I better go and get a defenseman.
Better go trade for Brandon Manning.
Well, he says, I'm not giving up a second round draft choice just to go and get some defenseman. Or I'm not going out and they'll say to me, yeah, you can have a defenseman, but we want Caleb Jones back. Just to say you've got a defenseman. Then when Larsson comes back, then what? You know, he says, eventually you got to trust some of your younger defensemen, and some will turn out to be players and others won't. Same with the waiver wire. You can't pick up a Thomas Hickey, say, who gets sent down and say, okay, yeah, he's pretty good. But then you look at his contract and he's got a couple of years left at $2.7 million. And then you say in the summer, now what do we do with him? So I think you got to live with what you got. Hey, they got a better defense than the Winnipeg Jets trotted out last night in Long Island with no Josh Morrissey, no Dustin Byfuglien, no Jacob Trouba, no Ben Chiarot from last year. And that their sixth defenseman they played last night. So they're in worse shape than the Edmonton Oilers are. So play the young players and some will turn out and some won't.
Well, I think the situation with that, Ethan Bear, if he's going to stay in the NHL, he's going to have to get better defensively. He was exposed about 3 or 4 times against the Los Angeles Kings. And that just, he's a puck moving defenseman. He's a good power play guy. But if you're going to stay in the league, you got to be able to defend as a defenseman. And I think he did get walked around a couple of times. So I think it's good for Ken Holland to say, well, I'm not going to do a stopgap measure. But if you don't, then the season could be over by the time Larsson gets back. And we saw that happen 2 years ago when Peter Chiarelli refused to get a stopgap measure. He thought, well, young guys are going to fill the void, and they weren't able to do it when they lost Sekera. No stopgap measure, they were out of the playoffs. By the time Sekera got back, the season was over. So I think, and this is from Sekera's knee injury in the playoffs. So he said, no, we're going to fill that void until Sekera gets back at Christmas with some young guys. Try to do it. By the time Sekera got back, it was pointless. It was moot because the season was over. It's good to say, yeah, no, I'm not going to give this up because I'm going to let my young guys try and fill that void. But you have to make the decision early whether or not they're going to be able to do it. You don't have 40 games to evaluate whether your young guys are able to do it, because there's no point getting Larsson back in 6 to 8 weeks if the Oilers are out of the playoffs. If he's going to miss 25 to 27 games, and at that point the Oilers are 6 games under 500, then it's on you for not doing something about it. They better recognize it really quick whether these guys can play, whether Pearson can play, whether Bear can play, whether Lagesson, if they bring him up, can play. What are you doing with Brandon Manning? Are you ever going to play him? Or is he just that bad a defenseman that you would rather play these rookies ahead of him? You have to do something, because the team is going to look at it and say, okay, we can't sacrifice the year because we lost one defenseman. And I think there's going to come a point where you have to make that decision. And I'd hate to see that happen when Larsson comes back and the Oilers are chasing the season again.
You don't have to make the decision till the end of October, though. You've got 3 more weeks for sure. You don't have to do it. I think you have to walk a fine. Nobody's trading you a top four defenseman. So you're not getting one of those. And so you're getting somebody's fifth or sixth defenseman. And the Oilers already have a fifth and sixth defenseman. And then you have to look at how much you trade for a guy, and he's got two more years left in his contract. You don't want that either when you've got all these young defensemen in the minors. So I think he'll – I mean, it's early. I mean, like I said, if at the end of the month and they're a couple of games under 500 and then he's saying, ah, and the guy's not, the guy's going to be out all in November, then maybe he has to go out and get somebody. But I just don't see – I just don't see him giving up very much to get a defenseman, not unless somebody's given you a really good defenseman. And I suspect Puljujärvi comes into play if you're looking for a defenseman.
Oh, maybe now it's been more aggressive.
Yeah, yeah, you're looking at it because, okay, I don't have to trade anybody on my own team, but I got this guy sitting in Europe. So, you know, if you want to give me a defenseman, I might give you this forward. So we'll see. But then you have to find some team that's scoring one goal a game or something like that, and it's got too many defensemen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you have, like, to let it, you have to let it pan
like
out.
If he, like, I look at it, and here's how I look at it. If, say, Johnny Boychuk didn't have 2 years left at $5 million, you might say to the Islanders who don't score a lot of goals, you want Puljujärvi? We'll take Boychuk, you know, right-shot defenseman. But he makes – Johnny makes a lot of money, and he's 33 years old, and he's got – he's not the player he once was. So there's not many of those around. I mean, Holland's been around the block. I'm sure he's going down every roster and looking at it and going, ah, there's something, maybe I might be able to get something off this team. So, but he's not going to do it right now. They're not 0-2, they're 2-0.
That's the Oil Spills podcast for today. You can subscribe to Oil Spills via Apple's podcast app or iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you may access your podcasts.